Hello and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019 and 2020 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for concerts by the North Carolina Symphony at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, November 1st and 2nd, in Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. Now, these performances will be conducted by guest conductor Karina Kanalakis. The program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform D'un Soir Triste by Lili Boulanger, and that will be followed by On the Cliffs of Cornwall by Ethel Smith. Then, following the intermission, the symphony will return to the stage to perform the featured work for this concert series, the Symphony No. 5 in C-sharp minor by Gustav Mahler. Now I'll begin our reading of the symphony notes. First, here is some background about our guest conductor. Karina Kanalakis begins her tenure as chief conductor of the Netherlands Radio Philharmonic in the 2019-2020 season. She also becomes the first principal guest conductor in the history of the Berlin Radio Symphony Orchestra, and she is featured as the Berlin Symphony's Artist in Focus in her inaugural season. She has conducted many of the top orchestras in North America, Europe, the UK, and Australia since winning the Sir George Schulte Conducting Award in 2016. Highlights of her 2018-19 season included leading the prestigious 2018 Nobel Prize concert with the Royal Stockholm Philharmonic and returning to the Prom with the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Already known as a violinist, Kanalakis was encouraged to pursue conducting by Sir Simon Rattle while she was playing regularly in the Berlin Philharmonic as a member of their Orchestra Academe. In addition to appearing as soloist with various North American orchestras, she played regularly in the Chicago Symphony and appeared on several occasions as guest concertmaster of the Bergen Philharmonic in Norway. Kanalakis previously served as assistant conductor of the Dallas Symphony Orchestra. She is a graduate of the Curtis Institute of Music and the Juilliard School as well. Born and raised in New York City, she speaks French, German, and Italian. The North Carolina Symphony begins this concert with a performance of D'un Soir Triste by Lili Boulanger. Boulanger was born August 21, 1893, in Paris. She died March 15, 1918, in Meze-par-Moulin. The work was composed in 1918, the first performance June 3, 1919, in Paris. Now here is the story. Though Lili Boulanger, sister of the famed musical pedagogue Nadia Boulanger, died in 1918 at the age of only 24, wrote musicologist David Noakes, hers was a creative life of more than mere promise. It was a life at least of partial fulfillment. The complementary works of D'un Matin de Printemps, of a spring morning, and D'un Soir Triste, of a sad evening, of 1918, were the last scores that Lili Boulanger wrote with her own hand. Her final work, Pie Jesu, probably envisioned as part of a complete Requiem Mass, was dictated to her sister. The manuscript's labored notation betrays the deteriorating condition of Lili's health. Nadia had to add to the finishing details of dynamics and articulations. The composer conceived each piece in three versions, one for orchestra, another for piano trio, and a third for violin or flute and piano, D'un Matin de Printemps and cello and piano, D'un Soir Triste. Now, here are some listening tips. Despite her early death and the debilitating state of her health, Lili Boulanger completed a substantial number of compositions in which she demonstrated a highly developed creative personality, imbued with the pastel impressionism so characteristic of the turn of the 20th century France. In a review of a performance of her music in 1926, Louis Vuillemont wrote, "Lili Boulanger brought to music a keen and prodigiously human sensibility, served in its expression by the full range of natural gifts. Such virtues, so rarely brought together for the benefit of one single creative temperament, are to be found in her works. D'un soir triste is mournful and painted in somber tones." The instrumentation for this work is 2 flutes, 3 oboes, 3 clarinets, 3 bassoons, 4 horns, 3 trumpets, 3 trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, celesta, and strings. Next on the program, the North Carolina Symphony will perform a composition entitled On the Cliffs of Cornwall by Ethel Smith. Smith was born April 22, 1858, in London. She died May 8, 1944, in Woking, Surrey. The work was composed in 1902 and 1904, the first performance November 11, 1906, in the Neues Theater in Leipzig. Richard Hegel was the conductor. Now here is the story. Ethel Smith, born in London in 1858 into a high-ranking military family, was the most recognized English woman composer of her time, an advocate for female musicians and women's rights, a militant suffragist, and a published author. She enjoyed unprecedented success for an English woman musician, including honorary doctorates from Durham and Oxford universities, and recognition as a Dame of the British Empire in 1922, the first female composer to receive that honor, won by her grit, self-confidence, and tenacity, and the quality of her music. The Wreckers, the third of Smith's 6 operas, had its source in a walking holiday she took in Cornwall in 1886, when the local villagers intrigued her with stories of their ancestors luring ships upon the rocky coast by extinguishing or misplacing coastal beacons so they could plunder the cargo after the vessels crashed. She took the subject up in earnest in 1902 when she collaborated on the libretto with a close friend, the American writer Henry Brewster, whose proposal of marriage she once refused because she explained it would interfere with her work. They created a dark story that was well suited to the hard life in the barren Cornish countryside. In the opera, the villagers, abetted by Pasco, the local preacher, bemoan the recent lack of wrecked ships because someone has been setting fires to warn sailors away from the coast. They vow to find the traitor. Mark, a young fisherman, is in love with Thirza, Pasco's wife, and his affections are returned. They both detest the local mercenary practice and are responsible for setting the warnings. When they are discovered, the villagers pass their harsh sentence, chained together in a sea cave, to await the deadly tide that will inevitably fill it. Here are some listening tips on the Cliffs of Cornwall. The prelude to Act II of the opera is a remarkable tonal evocation of the sea, the wave-shaped phrases of strings and harp mirroring the never-quiet ocean, the horn's subtle suggestion of a distant foghorn, the flute's imitation of a seabird's cry, and an expansive theme rising from the low strings, implying infinite horizons. This work is composed for the following instruments: 2 flutes, piccolo, 2 oboes, English horn, 2 clarinets, bass clarinet, 2 bassoons, contrabassoon, 4 horns, 2 trumpets, 3 trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony No. 5 in C-sharp minor by Gustav Mahler. Mahler was born July 7, 1860 in Kalist, Bohemia, and died May 18, 1911 in Vienna. The work was composed in 1901 and 1902, much revised through 1911, and the first performance was October 18, 1904 in Cologne, conducted by the composer. Now here is the story. Oh, heavens! What are they to say to this primeval music, this foaming, roaring, raging sea of sound? To these dancing stars, to these breathtaking, iridescent, and flashing breakers. So Gustav Mahler wrote during the rehearsals for the premiere of his Fifth Symphony in Cologne to his wife Alma in Vienna. Now, he was concerned that this new work, so different in style and aesthetic from his earlier symphonies, would confuse critics and audiences just when his music was beginning to receive wide notice. Derek Cook, in his study of the composer, noted the ways in which this symphony and its two successors differ from the symphonies number 1 through number 4. And here's a quote. Gone are the folk inspiration, the explicit programs, the fairy tale elements, the song materials, the voices. Instead, we have a triptych of pure orchestral works more realistically rooted in human life, more stern and forthright in utterance, more tautly symphonic, with a new granite-like hardness of orchestration. What brought about the radical change in Mahler's symphonic writing in 1902? Well, the question can never be securely answered. But he had recently fallen in love, a condition not unknown to alter a person's life. In November 1901, Mahler met Alma Schindler, daughter of the painter Emil Jacob Schindler, then 22, and regarded as one of the most beautiful women in Vienna. Now, Mahler was 41 at the time. Romance blossomed. They were married in March and were parents by November. Their first summer together, 1902, was spent at Meiernig, Mahler's country retreat on the Wörthsee in Carinthia in southern Austria. It was at that time that the Fifth Symphony was composed, incorporating some sketches from the previous summer. He thought of this work as their music, the first artistic fruit of his married life with Alma. But more than that, he may have wanted to create music that would be worthy of the new circle of friends that Alma, the daughter of one of Austria's finest artists and most distinguished families, had opened to him. Gustav Klimt, Alfred Roller, who became Mahler's stage designer at the Court Opera, architect Josef Hoffmann, and the rest of the cultural cream of Vienna. In the Fifth Symphony, Mahler seems to have taken inordinate care to demonstrate the mature quality of his thought. He was, after all, nearly twice Alma's age, and to justify his lofty position in Viennese artistic life as director of the court opera, a circumstance that brought about a radical change in his creative language. Free of his duties at the opera between seasons, he labored throughout the summer of 1902 on the piece at his little composing hut in the woods, a short walk from the main house at Meiernig. So delicate was the process of creation that he ordered Alma not to play the piano while he was working, lest the sound, though distant, should disturb him. She was a talented musician and budding composer until her husband forbid her to practice those skills after their wedding. And he even complained that the birds bothered him because they sang in the wrong keys. Every few days he brought his rough sketches to Alma, who copied them over and filled in some of the orchestral lines according to his instructions. The composition was largely completed by early autumn, when the Mahlers returned to Vienna, but Gustav continued to tinker with the score. The premiere in Cologne brought mixed responses from the audience and critics, It was not until one of his last letters, in February 1911, after he had almost entirely reorchestrated the symphony, that he could finally say, "The fifth is finished." Now, here's some listening tips. The structures of the individual movements of the Symphony No. 5 are large and complex, bearing allegiance to the classical models, but expanded and reshaped with continuous development and intertwining themes. The first and second movements, Mahler grouped the five movements of the Fifth Symphony into three parts. Thus, the opening Tauermarsch takes on the character of an enormous introduction to the second movement. The two are further joined in their sharing of some thematic material. The Tauermarsch is sectional in design, alternating between music based on the opening trumpet summons and an intensely sad threnody presented by the strings. The dramatic second movement, stormily moving with greater vehemence, resembles sonata form, with the soaring chorale climaxing the development section, only to be cut short by the return of the stormy music of the recapitulation. The third movement, the giant scherzo, stands at the center point of the symphony, the only movement not linked with another. The scherzo juxtaposes a whirling waltz Landler with trios more gentle in nature. And the fourth and fifth movements, balancing the opening movements, are the Adagietto and the Rondo Finale of Part 3, which have the quality of a preface and a summation. The serene Adagietto serves as a calm interlude between the gigantic movements surrounding it. In the closing movement, the Rondo Finale, Mahler's interweaving of themes is a masterful display of contrapuntal craft. The triumphant chorale that was snuffed out in the second movement is here returned to bring the symphony to an exalted close. The instrumentation for Mahler's Fifth Symphony is as follows: four flutes, two doubling the piccolo, three oboes, one doubling English horn, three clarinets, one doubling bass clarinet and E-flat clarinet, three bassoons, one doubling the contrabassoon, six horns, four trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Dr. Richard E. Rhoda. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019-2020 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.